My first guest is a man who's better known as a security analyst, writes extensively on issues to do with global security. But over the last week or two, he has been fairly outspoken on another issue. Tom Clonan's son, Owen, is wheelchair-bound and a client of the Central Remedial Clinic. And he's been, I think, to say the least, quite outraged at what's emerged about the salaries and bonuses among the management of CRC and former management and indeed other charities. Tom, you're very welcome to Making Waves. We haven't spoken on the programme before. And I'd like to hear more about what you have expressed most recently in a fairly long Irish Times article about the way your son has suffered as the result of cutbacks in the service.
Well, good afternoon, Tom. Mark, and thanks for having me. I suppose this story, it goes back 10 years, just over a decade. My son, Owen, he's now 11, he'll be 12 in the next 2 weeks, and he was born in the normal way. Sounds a bit odd, but you know, a normal delivery, no complications, and he was a healthy baby boy. He has two brothers and a sister, and everything was perfect. He reached all of his developmental milestones in the first year of his life, and was beginning to walk. He was, you know, beginning to pull himself up in the furniture and handrail, and you know, going from bum shuffling to getting up to walk, and everything was going as normal. And when he was about 14 months old, that progress, that development stopped, and he sort of regressed. And then we noticed little tremors in his hands and a little nystagmus in his eyes. And then we began the journey that so many families in Ireland embark upon. Subsequently, Owen was diagnosed with a very serious neuromuscular disease. It's called Pelizaeus-Merzbacher disease. It's a very rare disease. And so here we are 10 years later. Owen is intellectually normal. He's a great little boy. He's a great personality. He attends the local national school here in Booterstown. And we enjoy the support of our community and the school, and it's great. But in that 10 years, he's been attending the CRC, and to go back to those days 10 years ago when we discovered this awful discovery about Owen, you know, as young parents, it's very shocking. It's a very traumatic thing to experience, you know, all of your expectations and your hopes and for your child are, you know, severely, you know, they're revised. So sure. It's traumatic. You go through a period of grieving. And in all of that, that's a very lonely journey to undertake. But in all of that, we were referred to the Central Remedial Clinic in Clontarf. And I can only say that it was a transformative experience for us. The physiotherapists, the occupational therapists, the speech therapists, the hydrotherapists, the surgeons, the consultants, the doctors, the psychologists, the sociologists, the frontline staff in the CRC have become an extension of our family. And the way they interact with our little boy, as I described in the Irish Times, it's just magical. And they are internationally recognised as, you know, international best practice. What shocked us was the behaviour of the board.
This is what emerged recently in terms of the salary levels, and particularly, I think, the pension for the outgoing or former chief executive, Paul Kiley, yeah?
And just to put that into perspective, like everybody listening to this, since the collapse of the economy, when, you know, when all of the ethical and intellectual failures of the Celtic Tiger led us off a cliff, we, like every other family in the state, have had to do more with less.
Sure.
And we've seen Owen's services cut back, less and less physiotherapy, through no fault of the frontline staff, the CRC, but all part of the government's austerity programme to bail out bankers and their gambling debts. We little guys and girls like Owen have suffered reduced amounts of physiotherapy. And I suppose in January of 2013, Owen was prescribed a new wheelchair because he's growing.
He's growing, yeah. He's getting bigger, yeah.
And we got that wheelchair last week. It took over a year for the wheelchair to arrive. And in that time, for a whole year, Owen had to sit in a wheelchair that was too small for him. And this made the contractures in his legs deteriorate, and his little legs began to kind of fall back in on themselves. Mm. His feet began to curl in. He had to go for surgical review, and thankfully he does not need surgery. But I get up every morning with Owen. He's warm after his night's sleep at 6 a.m. and in the darkness we do our physiotherapy, our quality time we call it. And then I heard that €742,000 had been taken from the funding for the CRC to pay a top up for someone's remuneration, somebody appointed to the board. And that just, well, I can't tell you how that makes us feel, the sense of injustice, the helplessness we feel as parents. And
Let me ask you, Tom, how did they explain the delay in the delivery of the wheelchair back last year, early last year?
Well, this is part of the overall cutbacks to the health budget being imposed under the auspices of the austerity programme. And James Riley, Enda Kenny, Brendan Howland, they are personally and collectively as cabinet members responsible for this policy of cutting things like the respite carers grant, the mobility allowance, criteria for eligibility for medical cards. These initiatives designed to save money to pay for bankers' debts is hurting little boys like my son.
They would say, Tom, that they're under the hammer of the Troika, or were at that point under the hammer of the Troika programme, which was the programme imposed on the Irish people, I suppose, to pay back, to get the money to pay back those debts and indeed to keep the country going.
Yeah, but within that they had a certain amount of discretion and they chose to recoup some savings from monies that go to the most vulnerable and the most helpless people in our society.
And how did the CRC explain the delay in giving you? What did they say to you,
well,
the people you were dealing with?
The therapists that we deal with would do everything in their power to chase up the contract. They write the prescription and do up the specifications. The seating physiotherapists in the CRC would do that work and, you know, assess Owen and his needs, and then would do up a specification and a contract and a prescription for the chair. It then goes for funding to the HSE, and between them the frontline staff in the CRC would actually chase up that contract during the year, would constantly make phone calls, emails, they'd copy those to me. And in fairness to the HSE staff that deal with it, I'm in Dunleary, Rathdown. I think it's HSE Area 1. Mm. And there's a number of people in there who, unfortunately for them, I've gotten to know their names over the years. And they do everything also within their power. And they're embarrassed by the delay as well and would sympathise with me on the phone and will do everything to try and get it.
They're caught in the web. How did Owen sort of mentally and emotionally deal with this delay and the physical effects on him?
Well, Owen has a constellation of challenges, and he has borne all of these challenges with dignity and with grace. He's an 11-year-old boy. Mm. My job is to try and our job is to try and prolong his childhood insofar as we can, and to shield him from, I mean, the level of anger I feel in relation to this, I don't think it would be good for either my mental health or for Owen's mental health for us to go down that, have a discussion in that area. And we did think long and hard about putting Owen in that space in terms of writing an article
for
the Irish Times.
It's a courageous thing to do,
and having his photograph taken.
Yeah.
But we did that because there are thousands and thousands of families in Ireland who are caring 24/7, 365 days a year, and just cannot tell their story, cannot articulate the hurt that is being imposed upon them by our government in the name of banking debt. And I think the government are at fault here in the narrative that they put out. You know, the narrative has agreed between Labour and Fine Gael is that we have been bailed out by the Troika. That is not true. We have bailed out bankers. And as Irish citizens, we have borne a disproportionate level of debt in terms of, you know, where that money came from Central European, from European banks. It's an absolute disgrace.
And I saw
the government have collaborated with that narrative, with that description of it, of us being bailed out. We were not bailed out. We bailed them out. And people like my child and other helpless and vulnerable people across the country are paying the price.
And I saw the former head of the Bundesbank actually arguing the other day that perhaps Ireland should not have been forced to bail out the senior bondholders. Let me take a short break. We have a practice here on Making Waves of asking our guests to choose a bit of music. For those who are just tuned in, I'm talking to Tom Clonan, security analyst, about his son Owen, who is wheelchair bound with a muscular disorder. We're talking about the effect of cutbacks at the CRC on Owen's life. Our text number is 087-6944-500. You're listening to Making Waves. And Tom, tell us, what's your first choice in music?
Well, just to keep everybody in good humour this morning, I suppose in a previous life I was an army officer in the Irish Army, and I served overseas in the Middle East and in the former Yugoslavia. And fortunately or unfortunately, I served some very active tours of duty and experienced a lot of, I suppose, the killing of innocent men, women and children, both in the former Yugoslavia and in the Middle East. And when I had my own children and when I buried my own daughter, it was a kind of a lightning rod moment for me in realising that we're all actually brothers and sisters, whether it be in Syria or Israel or in Iraq or in the former Yugoslavia or in Belfast or Derry. And I suppose Johnny Cash singing that song by U2, it's a man who's coming to the end of his days and who realizes the fullest importance of it's the most powerful thing we have as human beings. It's a bit of an absence of it at the moment.
Tom, you mentioned there, and I wasn't aware of it, about your daughter. You lost a daughter. Can you tell us just a little bit about what happened there? I don't want to pass over it.
Sure, yeah. Actually, all of these issues are in my book, which I published there just before Christmas with Liberty's Press. It's called Whistleblower, Soldier, Spy. Mm. Forgive the plug now, it's available.
That's okay, I was going to mention it, Liberty's Press, yeah.
But, in 2003, we had a little girl who was full-term, and there was a cord accident at birth, and she didn't make it. And this is something, a little girl called Leiden. And I know that, you know, since then, from talking to people and friends and people I've met both at home and abroad, like one in four pregnancies ends in miscarriage, or can things don't always go right. And this is an experience that many thousands of people have. But I suppose, for me as a father, because I didn't carry our little girl, it was it was a very strange, heartbreaking experience. And I remember lying in bed with my hand on Leiden's mum, on her tummy, and I could feel Leiden. I could feel the little kicks and feel the movement inside. I could feel the life in her. And then at that delivery, and I've been at all of our children's births. And as you know, childbirth is, after 10 years in the army, it was one of the most traumatic things I ever experienced.
I thought things were rough,
But this was a completely silent birth, completely silent. Mm. And the nurses and the midwives in the Coombe Hospital, they were wonderful. They helped us. I had brought a baby grow for her, which was too small. And they made a little dress for her out of some curtain material, which we fastened onto her with a safety pin. And they actually had a Polaroid camera, and they advised us to take some photographs of our little girl, and so we did that. We took some flash photographs of her there in the dark in the hospital. That's something I'm glad we did, because we still have those photographs. But a couple of days later, when we took her to Glasnevin Cemetery to the Little Angels plot there, placing our little girl in the ground there, for me, it was such a hard thing to do, and it brought me right back to Lebanon in the mid-90s when I was there during an offensive operation mounted by the Israelis called Grapes of Wrath. And the Irish troops in April of 1996, we spent weeks digging the bodies of men, women and children out of houses, you know, houses that had been hit by missile or artillery strike. And I had never processed that experience. At that time in 96, I was a young guy, I had no kids. And then 7 years later, standing in Glasnevin Cemetery with my little daughter in my arms and putting her into the ground, that connected me with that experience.
It all came back. That's an extraordinary story. Let's go back to Owen. Having heard that tragic story about Leodon, Owen, as you say, is a bright, intelligent, young 11-year-old. How is he getting on now? He has the new wheelchair.
Yeah, well, Owen is getting on great. And as I said, he attends the local national school. We're lucky in that we have a special needs assistant, Catherine. She's absolutely fantastic. They have a great relationship. And Owen has a very good personality. He's well able to mobilise social support. So what he does is, in any given situation that he's in, he'll scan the room for likely candidates who'll you know, help him with something or give him a treat, and so he's quite socially skilled, and he's stubborn. He's got a great personality. He's going to need it. He's going to have to fight. Unfortunately, that's the way that Irish society is going. We've become less caring. There's a greater emphasis on Ireland as an economy and not as a society. One thing that struck me. I know that when they were excavating to build the bypasses around Limerick, they found, I think, there were remains of ancient Irish people as they were excavating. And one of the skeletons, it was quite clear, it was an adult of about 24 or 25. It was clear from the skeleton that adult would not have been able to walk. But our ancestors, the ancient Irish, adult had reached the age of 24, so the tribe or the community had carried them and helped them. And you know, it struck me we could learn a lot from our ancestors in relation to that, because people with disabilities are being left very far behind, unfortunately.
And they didn't probably have wheelchairs at that time. Before we go to our next song, I want to ask you a couple of things about your other work, if you don't mind, as a security analyst, and particularly the situation in Syria, which as more and more information emerges, is turning out to be one of the greatest tragedies, and indeed a country that's suffering an incredible amount of atrocities. They're in peace talks in Geneva. You're following that as a security analyst. Yep. What's your assessment of one, how that is going, and indeed the prospects of success of a some sort of a ceasefire and perhaps some sort of a settlement?
Well, I've been to Syria several times and spent a lot of time there when I was a soldier in Damascus. And prior to 9/11 and the global war on terror, you know, Damascus was a cosmopolitan city, not unlike Beirut. It was very westernized. You'd see women in, you know, business suits, and a very kind of a cosmopolitan society.
I was there myself in 1990, I think. I was on the search for Brian Keenan, the hostage in the Lebanon, and I was covering that story. And I thought, you're right, it was an extraordinary, not just a very modern and well-organized city, but also a very secular country.
Yeah, and, you know, there are parts of Damascus like Bab Touma, the Christian quarter, where even as recently, I was there in 2009, and you know, you'd see statues of the Virgin Mary in little nooks and crannies and alcoves and in the stone walls, and it had a curious echo of Ireland, the Ireland of my childhood in the 60s and 70s. You know, the statue of the Blessed Mary.
Yeah.
But going back after 9/11, I noticed that most of the women in Damascus were wearing veils, were covered up, and it was a very significant change in the atmosphere there. I remember being welcomed in Damascus by the passport control people, who looked at my passport and said, well, welcome to the axis of evil. And they had suffered a great deal from the sanctions imposed by the international community flowing from 9/11. But look, The Shia-Sunni tension in the Middle East has never been as pronounced as it is now. And you have a Shia axis that runs from Tehran through Baghdad, Damascus, and to Beirut, with Sheikh Nasrallah and Hezbollah in Lebanon, who are determined to, if you like, assert their ascendancy throughout the Middle East. Then you have a Sunni axis that runs from Iraq, these Al-Qaeda, Wahhabi, Salafists running right down to the Gulf states. And during the height of the Iraq War, sadly, we were exposed to some images of decapitations, usually of Westerners. So we got to hear about them because they were Westerners. And I remember being very, very shocked at the time, the deaths of people like Ken Bigley, Margaret Hassan, and others. But what I am seeing coming out of Syria at the moment, it's unspeakable. I've never seen anything like it. We're not hearing about it as much because most of the victims are Syrians. And the sectarian Sunni and Shia violence I've never seen anything like it.
But of course, this is a country which was relatively stable, but the destabilisation of Iraq,
your finger on it there. There was an influx of refugees at the height of the Iraq War. The Sunni and Christians were fleeing Iraq in huge numbers. At one point, there were 1 million Sunni refugees just inside the border. Then you also had of Syria, and then you also had an influx of jihadis from all over the Gulf states. And the Gulf states, the Saudis, the Qataris, they are fueling the Syrian opposition movement, and some of the people in that Syrian opposition movement. I mean, look, I'm not an apologist for Assad's regime. He's a brutal dictator. He's a murderer. But some of what is emerging as opposition there is frightening.
Isn't this goes to the heart of it? And how do you think this can be resolved at these peace talks in Geneva?
Well, I hope that the peace talks can take some of the heat out of the conflict. But really, the West has to reassess our support for despotic regimes in the Gulf states, because the young men who are fighting in these areas are young men who don't have access to education and jobs. So these are pools of human misery. And I know that sounds like a very airy-fairy concept, but we have to, in the long term, look at hoping that the economic conditions in those countries improve. And the European Union actually has a reasonably good policy. They call it seduction, where they increase trade and partnerships with our partners in the Mediterranean states in return for political reform. And I think that's the only way forward.
Well,
the American model of exporting democracy at the barrel of a gun is not going to work.
Well, I think that's a very interesting and valid point to end with. Listen, Tom, it's been fascinating talking to you. I think we should do it again because there's such a breadth of issues. Just to say that we've had quite a response to this interview, a text from Betty in Malahide. I'm sure plenty of retired people could help manage the CRC and other institutions for a fraction of what is paid to the Mercs and Perks crowd. Of course, there's a lot of political history to some of the people in the CRC and its links to the matter, but we won't go into that at this programme now.
Could I ask you one small favour?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Before I retired from the army, I did research into the sexual harassment and bullying of women in the army.
That's right, I remember.
And I became a whistleblower. We didn't have that term at the time. And I just want to say, at the moment, there are a number of whistleblowers in the news at the moment. Mm. And I would ask your listeners to try and support them and just think of those people and their families at the moment, because they're under terrible pressure at the moment. And there has been some very, very faulty coverage of the concept of whistleblowing in recent days. A lot of casual sort of dismissal of whistleblowers as people with an agenda or disgruntled, awkward people. And I would say that's not the case. These are people who are trying to do the right thing.
I've had a bit of experience of that myself. I take that point, Tom. And listen, thanks very much. I want to play out with your second choice. Declan texted in to say this is an excellent programme. Thank you, Declan. Before I sign off with your second choice, which I think is Happy by Pharrell Williams, I just want to say that Ronan Lynch, the producer, is going to be interviewing after the break Seamus Sheridan, who runs Sheridan Cheese, a well-known establishment in South Ann Street and indeed in Galway. And he'll be talking later to Salim Dastan, otherwise known as Mr. Upful, a reggae producer and presenter. And I'll leave you with that. And listen, thanks again, Tom. Talk
You're
to you soon.
Welcome. And when I hear this song, Happy, I just think of my little fella in his new red wheelchair, and he bops around the kitchen to it, and he's a happy little boy.
That's very appropriate, and thank you very much.